how that then works into how we live our lives. And sometimes I go to churches, and in our own church, I'm responsible for outreach, and people are saying to me, we need to be more equipped to go and tell others about Jesus, and I don't disagree with that. But I recognise that the greatest and loudest witness that goes on in our lives as we are known as Christians is how we live. Sometimes you have to have the words to back that up, but I'll tell you, if you don't live in a way that honors Christ, there are no words that are adequate. And I don't know what you experience in terms of people as you in the week maybe talk to people, as soon as you mention the word church, some people can be triggered into catalogues of how people in church have behaved badly. Is that something that you've heard? And we all know, those of us in church, is that we are not all perfect. You may have discovered that people outside church also know very well that people inside church are not all perfect. And so there's a thing about a faith that makes a difference, that is a commitment, as it says here, to transform the way we live and work for good. We're going to look at these verses in Hebrews 11 and see what we can learn about faith, and then I'll link that to the context of some of the things that I've been involved in more recently. So the first verse of Hebrews says, faith makes us sure of what we hope for and gives us proof of what we cannot see. Quite encouraged, though, that the writer of Hebrews lives in the same world that we do. Which is even the fact that we come here to worship a God that we've never seen is an act of faith. And he talks about faith being sure of what we hope for, which is proof of what we cannot see. I won't go into all of these, it's a long chapter, and there's lots of stuff that could be said. But the next verse, verse 6, that I wanted to quote to you is this: without faith, no one can please God. We must believe that God is real, and that he rewards everyone who searches for him. Here's a little aside. I was doing a part of the work I do, was I do an occasional interview with UCP radio program, and I did that last week. And we're just approaching the season of Ramadan, and one of the things that opened doors that we linked with other agencies, we pushed a book called 30 Days of Prayer for the Muslim World. And we encourage people to pray. We encourage people to pray for Muslims. We encourage people to pray for the Christians who are living in that situation. Ramadan can be a very difficult time for them. And I was talking about this on this radio interview. One of the things I was emphasising is that at Ramadan there are many, many Muslims who seriously seek God. And this verse is a reminder to me that there's a good reason to pray. Because God is able and willing to reward people who search for him. And some of the great encouragements and stories that are coming from so many places around what we call the Muslim world, it's a phrase I'm not entirely happy with, but you understand where there are majority Muslim populations. The encouragement of God revealing himself to people who pray. Many of them having visions of a man in white. Many of them seeking, going to find interpretation of the dreams they've had. Many Muslims recognising the place they need to go is to a church to ask for clarification of what's been going on. And there's story after story of people quoting what had been said to them in a dream, and then a priest or a leader in a church will be able to show them in the Bible where those words came from. God still is speaking in that kind of way to people. And it's good to pray. Controversial sometimes, people, but they're not really seeking God. Why? Because they're seeking God, and God is able to reveal himself to them. So that's a prayer point really for Ramadan starting at the end of this month. Without faith, no one can please God. We must believe that God is real, and he rewards everyone who searches for him. Then we go on to the next one. Well, I can't remember that it comes up. It'll come up in three goes. So you press all three will happen there. The passage goes on to start talking about people who have had faith. And what I found fascinating was about these three that I picked out. You'll know the stories, many of you will be familiar with the stories. Notice the first two, Noah and Abraham, they had faith and they obeyed. I was struck by the link between those things. In this sense, their faith was active. I get slightly confused sometimes about how. I think it's partly to do with evangelical churches, evangelical theology, which rightly puts an emphasis on people making a decision to follow Jesus Christ. And that becomes, we put our faith in Christ. And that's important. Don't misunderstand me at all. But then sometimes we talk about people losing their faith. It's as if we encourage people to take the kind of package off the shelf, and then if you don't sort of, a few years later, it's maybe you can't find it, it's not there, we've lost it. Some people go searching, many people don't. And it seems to me, again, an analogy which is highly inappropriate for me to make, but I observe, I read, that there are people who go to the gym, because going to the gym, you realise I have no practical experience in this whatsoever, but actually what they've worked out is if you want to strengthen muscles, you have to do exercise. And one of the things I've become more and more convicted about over the years is this, it's not just about having faith, it's about doing exercise faith. And if we want to exercise faith, part of the challenge for us is, do we actually make an effort to practice that exercise? See, if we become a Christian and decide to follow Jesus, one way of doing that is to turn to church and to read our Bibles and to pray. These are things that people encourage people to do quite rightly. But actually, in our tradition, there's very little often encouragement for recognising that what we've set out upon is a journey we walk by faith. And it's that exercise, again, the big people walking, I'm deeply impressed. My wife and I tried to make a decision when we visit the supermarket and park at the far end of the car park, so we have a long walk to get to the door. You see, we have to make small efforts to get there. But you understand the point I'm making? We understand that if we want to move, you have to walk. Sometimes I think people who lose faith, or lose their faith, are people who never really understood that it was something that had to be actively exercised, there was a walk process going on. And again, I observed and read that if you're in the gym, if you can already lift one weight, what you do is you put a bit more on it, so it's a bit more effort to push it a bit further. And I think part of these stories in Hebrews 11 are stories of people who learned what it was, if you like, to push their faith a bit further, to make that extra effort it was to trust God. Noah obeyed and built a boat. In a few words, you can sum up a very, very interesting story, can't you? Some of you will have seen the films, and sometimes they do capture this idea that there was something practically absurd about Noah starting to build a boat where there was no water. That was a pretty big exercise of faith. But he obeyed. If he hadn't obeyed and stretched that willingness to trust God, then there would be no rescue. Abraham obeyed and left for a country he'd never seen. Story of Abraham, and that particular example is because that's a fascinating one. It wasn't that Abraham had a vision of where he wanted to be, he was just willing to be obedient and be where God wanted him to be. Quite a subtle but important difference. Sarah had faith that God would do what he had promised. She found it a bit of a joke, what God had promised, and she laughed. She had faith. And part of the reason I wanted to almost pause at this point was to make this applicable, to add to myself. What is it that we are looking to God to do? Have we had enough faith to even ask God and to seek God for what he wants us to be? Where do we need to be obedient? Where as a church do we need to be obedient? What is God setting before you as an individual and you as a church? How are you being challenged to exercise faith? What are you pressing for? What are you seeking God for? Because I'm fairly sure that, again, I understand that if you stop using a muscle altogether, then eventually withers and becomes completely useless. And if we don't have things that we understand that God is calling us to do, I'm trying to think of examples that would be relevant. It may be about your particular situation, just trusting God to take one small step. But for you, you know, it's a very big step, and you're not sure you've got the faith, the willingness to try. It's too risky. Maybe talking to a neighbour. I don't know, you'll be able, I hope, by God's Spirit, to apply how this might apply to you. Sometimes God gives a very clear vision of what he wants to see happen. You have to have the faith to take the steps to see it happen. I remember a long time ago, a preacher talking about faith and asking somebody whether they could imagine their next door neighbour becoming a Christian, and they'd been praying for it, but they couldn't really ever imagine how it would happen. So the question was, well, could you imagine having a conversation with your neighbour? Well, they hadn't had that many conversations, but they could just about imagine that might happen. And so they prayed they might have an opportunity to have a conversation with the neighbour. That afternoon they stepped out into their drive, neighbour stepped out to drive at the same time, to think of something as trying as a lawnmower's broken before your lawnmower. They'd taken a small step, and that small step led to other steps. I don't know the story about that person was really great, so it's not quite as simple as that. But you understand the point about what we trust God for, but you understand also the point about what we trust God, we have to keep stepping, we have to keep moving, we have to keep saying, I want to move on with God, and there are things that we need to keep testing out, to keep trying out, to use our faith. So there's loads of examples in Hebrews 11, and the preacher's favourite verse, it says, I could go on. And I'm conscious that I can see a clock. I'm going to put your watches, so I'm watching you all very carefully. But the next slide coming up says something quite interesting about how this sort of work. They agreed they were only strangers and foreigners on this earth. They were looking forward to a better home in heaven. And it struck me, I've got to say something, because my experience is there are Christians who get hold of the idea that there's two extremes. Some people get hold of the idea that their citizenship is in heaven, and they're looking forward to being in heaven. And they're looking forward to being in heaven so much they give up on this world altogether. I remember when I was helping to be involved in an environmental campaign around issues of climate change, I got fairly vitriolic letters from Christians saying, why would we bother about this earth when we're all going to be in heaven? What was the point? It was all going to burn up anyway. And that's one kind of extreme view, one in the spectrum of Christians who don't ever have any kind of larger perspective than the next day. And so life is bound up with the day's decisions, it's bound up with how am I doing today, and I focus completely on that. And I think to go part of what Hebrews 11 is about a faith that is confident about where our future is, it's confident about who holds our future. I know who holds our future. But having received that confidence is then committed to being obedient in the here and now. Because part of the way we walk by faith is that we walk into our future, and our future is entrusted to God. And it has an eternal dimension. But if we just wait for that eternal dimension, we miss the fact that the whole point of the kingdom of God is that the eternal dimension is brought into our dimension here and now. We live lives in situations and in places, and you work places, some of the places I hate to mention on Sunday, that you'll be in tomorrow on Monday morning, where you know that God's Spirit needs to be at work. And part of the whole point of your salvation was to help to make you agents of God's plan and purpose, not just for the future, because the future is made up of God's plan and purpose being worked out from here into the future. So there's this whole concept that we recognise that our citizenship is in heaven. But the citizenship in heaven gives us the authority and the confidence to be God's citizens and God's agents, if you like, here on earth. So then it goes on with these words, which as I just referred to. What else can I say? There is enough time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets. Sure, the readers of the letter to the Hebrews are very glad that there wasn't time to tell them all that. They didn't know they got to chapter 11 because there weren't chapters when they first read it, but nonetheless they knew they were a long way through. Their faith helped them conquer kingdoms, and because they did right, God made promises to them. They closed the jaws of lions and put out raging fires and escaped from the swords of their enemies. Although they were weak, they were given the strength and power to chase foreign armies away. Some women received their loved ones back from death. Many of these people were tortured, but they refused to be released. They were sure they would get a better reward when the dead are raised to life. Others were made fun of and beaten with whips, and some were chained in jail. Still others were stoned to death, or sawed in two, or killed with swords. Some had nothing but sheepskins or goatskins to wear. They were poor, mistreated, and tortured. The world did not deserve these good people who had to wander in deserts, on our mountains, had to live in caves and holes in the ground. Imagine you're at an advertising PR company, and the task that you've been given is to come up with an advertising, we're talking about pharmaceutical broadcast, come up with the broadcast to encourage people to become followers of Jesus Christ. My guess is that these verses of Hebrews 11 would not be referred to too quickly. It's not exactly the most enticing prospect, is it? A sort of detailed list of the tortures that might lie in wait for people. And the next passage, all of them, please God, because of their faith, but still, they die. That's quite how people want to view religious faith these days, isn't it? We live in a world where part of the consumer choice is to perhaps look for the faith or look for the kind of set of beliefs that will seem to suit us best, that will seem to look after us as well as they can. You meet Christians who, if they've had a sort of sore finger or a bad head for a day, so really feel that God's let them down very badly. And I know when I came to speak to you before, I don't remember that, because I found the PowerPoint, and you won't remember. But I remember referring to the reality that, in fact, the New Testament, you see, is written by people who face persecution, experience persecution, for those who are experiencing persecution. These words in Hebrews partly make sense. If you look at the end of chapter 10, the people that it's being written to, you share the sufferings of prisoners, and when all your belongings were seized, you endured your loss gladly, because you knew that you still possessed something much better, which would last forever. Do not lose your courage then, because it brings with it great reward. You need to be patient in order to do the will of God and receive what he promises. Just a little while longer, it goes on. We are not people who turn back and are lost. Instead, we have faith and are saved. And then he starts into chapter 11. To have faith is to be sure that things are favorable. I remember when I was a very little boy, my father had been friends with a missionary. Some of you have probably heard of that, and some of you look as if he could be just about one. There was a famous missionary called Geoffrey Ball, who'd been a missionary in Tibet, and had been, when Tibet was overrun by the Chinese, he'd been captured and had been tortured, and he wrote a book about that. Well, he came to stay at our house when I was about 6 years old. And I remember thinking, I knew enough to know this man, you know, was a kind of heroic figure who had survived all of these difficulties and so on, and was this sort of superhero going to arrive at our house. And then a man about, my memory is he was about 5'3" with big pair of glasses turned up, and a 6-year-old boy had a little bit of a shock to the system. It wasn't quite how he imagined him to be. But it was that recognition that I remember being cheeky enough to ask him how he managed to cope. I was a cheeky little boy and known for it. Till I discovered that the Bible was true, I said that God is sufficient for each day. That was it in response to that particular question. But I remember that particularly well. And so here's the context of having faith in the face of real opposition, of real challenge, of physical challenge. It makes me think partly that the things that challenge me in my faith, the things that I'm looking to God for, I don't have to suffer for these things. Part of what I find really deeply challenging and deeply encouraging is that people who do hold on to their faith, not always, but many do. And they discover that the promises of God are real. Their faith is held and strengthened through the things that go on. So I looked up to see the latest news of how people are experiencing this today. Here's 17th of May. Four men arrested at a secret church meeting in Central Asia have been violently pressured by state police to recant their faith. The Christians, who had already been arrested four times in the last few months, spent 15 days in prison, during which they were interrogated and tortured. And it goes on, next slide. For 15 days, policemen beat us brutally with police batons. One of the men passed the door open doors. They beat our heels, muscles, joints. They also did their spree, putting on gas masks and tying hands. Different methods of physical and psychological pressure applied to the men. All the beatings were accompanied by interrogations. The men were also forced to endure in heat before being held in cells with almost no water and food. These are brothers and sisters in Christ facing that kind of challenge of faith right now. part of the context in which the book of Hebrews was written is a context that many, many Christians around the world understand. They understand that they're being called to be faithful and to trust God through very, very difficult circumstances. I don't know how, when you read that, how you feel you would react, how much that would encourage you. The next bit says, as a result of the pressure, two of the men renounced Christ. I don't know how you react to reading that. Are you disappointed? You're not surprised? God gives courage. Two of them didn't. But two of them did. One of the ongoing challenges of those scores, they'll probably meet up again in the future. Two of them know that they didn't give in. Two know that they did. One of the ongoing challenges for many people who face persecution is having to share fellowship with those who disappeared and go and got tough and came back and go and got eaten. But I found that my faith has been strengthened and encouraged by what I've been aware of, how people cope with these situations and what they go through. The next slide is a picture of a lady called Mary. And I'll try not to read out too much, but I want you to get a flavour of her story, just to see how we can be encouraged. This is a Mary who's in Tanzania. I met Elias, chairman of the youth group at church, after I was born again. We fell in love and got married on the 11th of October 2009. After our wedding life was good, I gave birth to our son Prosper in July 2010. When he was three, I became pregnant again and gave birth to our daughter, Priska. 8 months later, Elias was killed. It happened on the night of the 21st of October 2013. Came home from work, took a bath, had his dinner, and then went to church around 9 p.m. to guard it because there had been a spate of attacks on churches in the area. The next morning, a crowd from church knocked on my door and I knew something terrible must have happened. A pastor told me the church had been attacked and Elias had been beaten to death. Two others were severely injured but survived. When I heard the news, I wailed so loud the neighbours came to see what was going on, she says. For a long time afterwards, I was very angry at the attackers. Many churches had been burnt, some church leaders killed, others burnt with acid. I wondered why we Christians had to suffer all these things to the point that the persecution reached my own family. Honestly, if I was to meet one of the attackers, I do not know what I would have done. I was devastated at the thought of my children losing their father at such a young age. They needed their father. Single parenting is very difficult. I do my best and have much sorrow when I remember what we used to be. Now I am alone. They killed my dreams. I also have many questions towards God. Why is this happening to me? Why am I left a widow at such a young age? Why me? But as time went by, I started reading my Bible again and eventually started accepting that my husband was gone. I realised that God loved him even more than I did. As I remember that he too knows the pain of loss since he gave his only son to die for us, I started blessing God. It was hard work. But today my relationship with him is strong, even though sometimes when I start to pray, I suddenly have a memory and cannot pray any further. But I thank God, he gives me more and more strength when I've seen him act for me. I have never gone to bed hungry. I have seen day by day the Lord is with me. He's with my children. He gives me such strength to move on. And we are doing well. And when I feel pain and I get low, I switch on the radio and sing along to gospel music. It eases the pain in my heart and mind. I've been amazed by God's goodness to me, the overwhelming support I have received. My church has been so good to me. They've not abandoned me. They continue to visit to take care of me and the children. I embrace that love. Open Doors told the story of Mary and encouraged people to send cards, and so many people wrote. She said that when the Open Doors worker first came, she told me words from God that encouraged me. The next time she came, she brought me a big box of cards. There were so many. I was deeply comforted because they proved to me the whole world had heard about my misfortune. My English is not so good, but even so, I kept seeing the words, "Don't worry, Mary, God bless you, Mary." That I could understand. The large box of letters also caught the attention of visitors. Whenever they asked about it, I told them to take a look inside. Many liked the card so much, they asked me if they could take a few home with them. I now have just a few left at home. My dream for the future is to live well with my children and stand strong. As their mother, I have no choice but to be strong and do business to ensure my children do not lack necessities. The Lord tells me he is the lamp unto my feet and the light of my path. I know he will lead and guide me all through my life. I will walk in his ways all the days of my life and will never leave him. Pray with me that God will continue to strengthen me so that I will raise my children well. I know I'm still young, but that is why I ask for his help. To successfully raise my two children, it is hard, but I am confident that with your prayers, Lord, I will make it and not lose hope. The Father wants to read all that out to you, because it's an example of somebody whose faith has been stretched to breaking point, but has not been lost. And by faith, she's trying to walk and to bring up her children and trying to help them become followers of Jesus Christ as well. And that's part of what I discover in the challenges. I read about these verses. This is the reality of the New Testament, that there is an enormous amount of pressure, there is suffering, there is persecution, and yet there is still hope and faith and still we work. Here's some more verses that I quoted last time I came to you. We are hard pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body. The next verse says this. Or is it not? It's the same verse in a different version. In fact, we've been surrounded and battered by trouble, but we're not demoralized. We're not sure what to do, but we know that God knows what to do. We've been spiritually terrorized, but God hasn't left our side. We've been thrown down, but we haven't broken up. Then the message goes on to say, what they did to Jesus, they do to us. Trial and torture, mockery and murder. What Jesus did among them, he does in us. He lives. Our lives are at constant risk for Jesus' sake, which makes Jesus' life all the more evident in us. And I wanted to finish by saying faith makes a difference. Some of you have come to church this morning and you are carrying a real burden. You are feeling stretched. And you may, I'm not trying to say to you, well, just think about Mary, but what she had real difficulties. That's not the issue, is it? Because the difficulties that you face, or the real difficulties that you face, are the real challenges you face. And you may feel battered, you may feel demoralized, and you may feel that you want to give up. But the promise of God is that he doesn't let you go. And the reality is that he's with you. Some of you come to church and things are going reasonably well. And my word to you would be, just think, how does God want to exercise faith? He doesn't want you to drift from day to day thinking, well, things are fine. Because the danger of that is that when a real problem happens, you've got no reserves to fall back on. Years and years ago, I got I got stuck in Ethiopia in the middle of the big famine in 1984. And for about 6 hours, all the things I relied on, telephones to work, vehicles to work, being able to communicate, to know what's happening, couldn't call the AA or do any of those things. And I was told, because I'd never been in that situation before. All the things I usually relied on went. And I was not a very nice person to know for you. And I only discovered the Learning City had lost, and I was really upset. And then I got very upset that I was upset about that when there were 30,000 people dying of starvation in the town around me. But I hold on to that experience even after all these years and remember there was a moment when I needed to have had practice at exercising faith so that I had reserves and strength when the real pressure came. And for some of you, there are challenges and opportunities. For the church, there are challenges and opportunities. And God wants faith to be exercised and to be proved, a faith that makes a difference. When I came last time, I finished with the... I finished with what's called a Franciscan benediction. And the last verse of it says this, may God bless us with no foolishness. To believe that we can make a difference in this world so that we can do what others claim cannot be done. And that seems to me to be the essence of faith in a powerful God who is with us by the Spirit. So I'm going to finish with that same benediction that I used at the time again. May God bless us with discomfort and easy answers, half truths and superficial relationships so that we may live deep within our hearts. May God bless us with anger at injustice, oppression, exploitation of people so that we may work for justice, freedom and peace. May God bless us with tears to shed for those who suffer from pain, rejection, starvation and war, so that we may reach out our hands to comfort them, to turn their pain into joy. And may God bless us with enough foolishness to believe that we can make a difference in this world, so that we can do what others claim cannot be done. Father, I pray for each individual in the church here as a group, they may be characterised by having a compassionate commitment to transform the places in which they live and work for the sake of your kingdom.